Hello everyone and welcome to JFG tonight for this debate preparation for tonight. So we'll be preparing for the 9 p.m. Eastern Time debate on the Crucible. It would be with counterpoints, and it will be Ukraine versus Russia. I will be taking the side of Russia. As you can see, I've changed my TV background. This is Catherine the Great. Define says the woman on the TV screen. Lol, it's Catherine the Great. She's the Tsar of Russia, who has conquered Crimea and also settled people onto Alaska, which eventually got sold to the U.S. But yes, she is one of the great Tsar, and there will be more showing up on my TV. I thought it would be better than the American flag for the purpose of this debate. How are you doing, people, on the regular chat? So tonight, I guess we can just review. I've taken some notes about what I think about the Russia-Ukraine conflict and why I think it's ultimately a positive conflict for us. I've also put the Soviet era flag. Just a reminder of a great era for Moscow, a great era for a people who has developed under the Soviet Empire, space exploration, massive advancements in science. I know it's not a regular thing for libertarians to be siding with the Soviet Empire, but as a libertarian in a bizarre situation, in a bizarre world, you have to find unlikely allies at times. And so, and it's partly trolling also. Kenzie says, lol, communist JF. Oh boy. Trudeau's defense minister announced to Canadians that Canada has exhausted inventory from the Canadian Armed Forces and there are capacity issues after sending all of our equipment to Ukraine's president. Canada has become the first country to lose a war it's not a part of. I mean, this is something. You have to credit the Canadian government here. That's it. That's all we had in our fighting abilities. We've been beaten by Russia without even fighting against them. I mean, that's just how bad. That's how little protection I benefit from the Canadian government. Yes, if USA wants to invade Canada, now would be a perfect time. Carlota says, Jeff, the Soviet Union is not cool. It's partly trolling and it's partly for the fun that it's very rare that a right-winger will endorse the Soviet flag, but I understand. I'm not telling you everything was good about the Soviet Empire, but you have to respect the fact that it took Russia, it took essentially, well, bigger than Russia current day, it took a whole part of this world and propelled them into being a superpower. And you have to respect some of it. I've also illustrated, just before Catherine the Great, I've illustrated Alexander II. He is the Tsar who liberated the slaves in Russia. He's also the Tsar who sold Alaska to the US, which I think was not a super intelligent strategic move. I think I would like eventually Alaska to come back to the Russians in the line of the Catherine the Great colonization of this part of the North American continent. Justet says, JF, why don't you play the Russian national anthem in the background softly during tonight's debate? I could. So if you guys want the link to this debate, here it is. The Crucible. I don't know if they will also have a Odyssey link, but the link that I have is on YouTube, so I'm putting it in the regular chat. Russia claims to hit Ukraine with hypersonic missile. Expert warns it is part of Putin's strategic plan. Expert warns Putin is messaging NATO that he has a higher tolerance for nuclear warfare. I agree with this analysis. I'm very excited about this missile having been launched. It is the Dagger missile, the Kinzhal missile. This is a missile that can be equipped onto a plane, and it's a hypersonic missile in that it goes up to, well, it goes, its regular speed is around Mach 4, 5, so 4 or 5 times the speed of sound. And in fact, it can attain up to Mach 10. So it can go extremely quick. One of the great strategic advantages of this missile is that it has an unpredictable flight path. So instead of reaching like a ballistic missile being thrown like a baseball that you would throw, it is a missile that changes direction as it progresses toward its target. So you never get to know exactly the target until it hits it, because it does whoop, whoop, whoop. It doesn't do a linear progression. So because of this, it is extremely hard to stop it. It is hard to combat with anti-missile defense. And if a properly random trajectory, a kind of random progression from the shooting to the target is implemented, you cannot know where it will hit, so you cannot send an air defense missile that needs a couple of minutes in advance, and you need, most importantly, to know the current trajectory of the missile and be able to predict its future trajectory. So because of this, it is the perfect missile to equip with a warhead that costs a lot, a warhead that you don't want to be, you absolutely don't want it to be blocked by the defense systems, and so it's perfect for nuclear warheads. So this particular one that they fired was not equipped with a nuclear warhead, but it can. That's the beauty of it. For now, it's just a test. Essentially, it's the first combat situation in which this missile was used, and this signals by Putin to the rest of Europe, I can use much stronger weapon than what I've been using. Now, he used it to target a specific ammunition depot in the west of Ukraine. Very impressive. Technically, I'm very impressed by the use of that missile. I'm very enthusiastic about it. I think this will make the US think twice now that this kind of missile has been used in combat situation and it's operating. Just that says, Comrade JF for the win tonight. Azoziliak says, nice flag, Comrade JF. Thank you so much for the super chat. Go away, says JF. Are you aware of the Monroe Doctrine? It's an important point when illustrating how the US views its defense strategy and useful in countering shills that suggest Russia's defense goals are unreasonable. Yes, so the Monroe Doctrine... It was a strategic positioning. If I'm correct, it was the first one, right? And it got replaced by a corollary of some kind. I don't remember the name of the corollary. But the Monroe Doctrine was to not intervene in the outside of the US. So don't get involved in a war, essentially, where you're not the target. And this has motivated a kind of American isolationism, which you may think, well, JF, America is not isolationist. What happened? Well, they removed that doctrine, and they replaced it with something, although I want to make sure that I know what it is, the name of it. The Monroe Doctrine was a United States foreign policy position that opposed European colonialism in the Western Hemisphere. It held that any intervention in the political affairs of the Americas by foreign powers was a potentially hostile act against the US. The doctrine was central to US foreign policy for much of the 19th and early 20th century. Okay, so the Monroe Doctrine would not be the original isolationist doctrine. Perhaps I got this wrong. But what was the name of this... Despite the United States beginning as an isolationist country, blah, blah, blah. There's a name to it. What is the Roosevelt Corollary? So the Roosevelt Corollary The doctrine's author, chiefly future president and then Secretary of State John Quincy Adams, saw it as a proclamation by the U.S. of moral opposition to colonialism, but it has subsequently been reinterpreted and applied in a variety of instances. As the U.S. began to emerge as a world power, the Monroe Doctrine came to define a recognized sphere of control that few dared to challenge. The Roosevelt Corollary was added to the Monroe Doctrine in 1904, asserting the right of the U.S. to intervene in Latin America in cases of flagrant and chronic wrongdoing by a Latin American nation. Okay, so I didn't know that. It's considered just an addition to the Monroe Doctrine. But starting at the Roosevelt Corollary, you have essentially America can intervene anywhere where it wants, and it can justify this intervention by local violations of human rights or by its own security interest. So yeah, I mean, by the standard of, but this is not the approach I use in tonight's debate, although it's an important one. I don't think it's fit to address the position of counterpoints, because counterpoint is not someone who's ashamed of the U.S. imperialism across the world. So he's a very, it's not like I'm going to debate a far leftist who's been anti-war his whole life and he's been complaining about the American imperialist army forever. We're talking about a guy who actually is a next soldier, who's been a policeman. He's a centrist ex-soldier. So he's very much in line with the American military and the kind of stuff that it did. And he's not an anti-war guy. So that kind of comparison with the American imperialism, that would be definitely a good point. For example, if I was to debate Hassan Piker, and that Hassan Piker would side with Ukraine. But that's not what we're... That's not what we're after tonight. Tonight we're talking to a guy who's all about, oh yeah, we need to arm the Ukrainians. Like, here, let me do a video about how you need to not point your AR-15s at other people. This kind of guy. So from his perspective, shaming the American Empire is not a valid leverage point onto him. So let me go through my notes here and I will present to you what my talking points will be for tonight. So I've divided my talking points into three different categories. I think that this conflict can be looked at from an interesting perspective from the point of view of the West, and I think there's something good about it from the point of view of the West. It can be looked at from the perspective of Russia, and I think there can be good things said about the justification, the moral justification for an intervention from the point of view of Russia. And then it can be looked at from the point of view of Ukraine, and I believe that it can be justified to be desiring this conflict from the point of view of the Ukrainian population. So going through these three points, starting with the perspective of the West, which I believe to me is the most important because I'm a Western European. I look at everything from the point of view of the West. Now, Nicolas Petris says, Jeff, please do pawn Hassan. Well, I'm not sure that such a debate could happen because it seems that Hassan Piker, although I've not watched his first-hand statements, but based on Counterpoint's description of him, he seems to be pro-Russia or kind of not so pro-Ukraine as most people. And I would guess that that's kind of a... Probably Hassan Piker has a accelerationist, communist, leftist positioning where he thinks that, well, the American Empire is so disgusting that any force that opposes to it must be supported, even if it's a capitalist force and a patriarchal force like Vladimir Putin. I don't know. That's what I'm guessing, but I've not watched primary Assange biker content, so I cannot testify to it for myself. So from the perspective of the West, here are my main talking points. The governmental regimes protected by NATO are hypocritical political beasts that present themselves as open and free, when in fact the American totalitarian regime works on the exclusion of free thought by cancel culture, the exclusion of dissidents by financial isolation, and the transformation of the economy into exclusive cartels for the ruling class to benefit from. This regime has been constantly expanding in its anti-white actions, as well as the anti-reproductive propaganda that takes the form of political LGBT activisms in our schools and forced sex surgery onto children against parental consent. If you are in disagreement with this regime, if you look at the West and what it has become and you think it is bad, then there is something positive about Russia rising as an antagonist. Because if you really hate the way the American empire is turning, you're going to have to root for its antagonist. And it doesn't matter that Russia is not a perfect antagonist and that you wouldn't want to live in Russia. What matters is that a force is rising out there in the world that can oppose to the disgusting aspects of the American empire and that can suggest another path forward for humanity. And even if Russia is the imperfect candidate for this, I will still be happy that some antagonism is appearing to counter the main narrative of the American empire. No, it doesn't matter to me that this force is not exactly as I would want it. It doesn't matter to me that although I'm a libertarian, Russia is not a libertarian country. It's a good thing that someone opposes to American hegemony across the world, and today it's Russia. So I say it is time for this regime to be countered by a force, and any force will do. Russia and China are good potential candidates for offering another way forward. And that's just at the description I've done of the American empire is just at the economic and ideological level. At the military level, the American military has essentially been co-opted as a purveyor of meat cannon to fight for Israeli interest in the Middle East for the last few decades. There is simply no American proper global policy, military and geopolitics policy. What's happening is that America is used as a shell taken by parasitic forces that are taking over its elite and controlling the financial, industrial, and military power that the US is for interests that are completely foreign to the American population. And people like Counterpoints who have been involved in the military have been either knowingly or unknowingly playing the puppets of this abuse of the American regime by international interests that are completely foreign and completely opposite at times to those of the American people. So if you are from the West and you look at this regime for all of its defects and you say, this needs to change, we will need another way forward. We will need antagonists who can say no to the American empire. And this week, this month, this year, perhaps, and maybe for the years to come, these antagonists are Russia and China to a certain extent, perhaps more in the future. Just that says, JF, here in the chat is Russian and can translate any / all Russian spoken vids you play here. All right, well, it's good to bug Sam. So it's good to know that we have an audience member who can do that kind of translation. If you want to, if you are subscribed to Discord, send me a DM on Discord so that I can have if you're able to, so that I can have someone if I need a translation for you to be able to make these translations when I send them because I would need them before the show so I can figure out what I'm talking about if I do present that kind of video. So this sets it for the perspective of the West. Our governments have been corrupted. They are not following the Constitution anymore, and they are at war with our own people. For that reason, we have to find forces that will eliminate those governments, or at least weaken them, or at least provide some kind of opposition to them. And as long as our governments have their eyes turned over the rest of the world, they will have less time and less energy will be invested in our oppression. The American regime is hypocritical in that it proposes an image of liberty, free enterprise, and success, when in fact it encodes into its anti-white policies like preferential employment on the basis of race. It encodes the defeat in advance of white people. And in the market that is rising right now under the American hegemony, it will not be a meritocracy anymore going forward. You will be pursued for being maybe white, maybe a Trump supporter. And therefore, the actions of this government and the power that is taking over our nations is not in our interest. What Russia is proposing is a different model. And I want this different model to at least exist, if not as a force that would eventually clash militarily with America, at least as a balance of power and as an illustration to the people of the world that another path forward was possible. A path that is not anti-white, a path that is not anti-family, a path that cares about some degree of demographic stability. Those are the defects of the West that I want to see fixed eventually, perhaps in a new nation somewhere, but at least for now, what we will have is the Russian model standing as an opposite illustration that existence is possible in another way. Number two is probably the most important, the question of whether Russia is justified in its intervention. So from the perspective of Russia, does this war make sense? So I say the current regime of Ukraine is an anti-Russian genocidal regime installed through an armed revolutionary coup which denied the legitimacy of Ukrainian democracy. So in 2014, Yanukovych was president and he was duly elected as president. There was no misgivings in the running of the election. So he was the legitimate representative of Ukraine. He got ousted by revolutionary forces in his country. And the message that these revolutionary forces, which included armed snipers at the top of buildings shooting onto civilians, and which led eventually to Yanukovych having to leave Ukraine, the message that this coup sent to the Ukrainian population is, if you ever vote for someone who's too pro-Russian, the violent forces that exist within Ukraine will cancel your vote. They will eventually replace that person with someone who's more sympathetic to the American Empire, to the European Association. So that is not democracy. That is not a legitimate government. And even if there were elections run after Yanukovych, which eventually led to replacements up to Zelensky now, those elections are not legitimate in my view. You cannot have a legitimate election when the population is traumatized by the potential that if they vote for the wrong person, if they vote for someone who's too pro-Russian, that person will eventually be threatened to death and will have to flee the country in exile. The Ukrainian regime, on top of this, after the ousting of Yanukovych, has been pursuing anti-Russian policies aimed at making life miserable to dissidents of the Zelensky and Poroshenko regimes. Exclusion from public employment for more than 1 million Ukrainians who were judged too sympathetic to Russia. exclusion from public pensions and bank services for people in the Donbass region for ideological dissidents, loss of employment opportunities for people judged to have dissident political opinions, violent oppression of ethnic Russians in the Donbass region by the Azov Battalion, a neo-Nazi group. More than 13,000 people have died in the last decade, in less than the last decade, in the war against the Donbass region. And this is a number provided by the United Nations. So you have a constant oppression of ethnic Russians in Ukraine, depriving them of opportunity, depriving them of the possibility to equal success and employment and services. And then you're surprised that someone comes to their defense. Furthermore, there was a denial of democratic process because there were votes in Crimea, DPR, LPR. These places all voted to exit Ukraine and, in the case of Crimea, to join the Russian Federation. In the case of DPR and LPR, to confirm their independence. But Ukraine didn't respect that vote. Ukraine instead tried to generate news articles saying that these votes were invalid, that they were obtained under violence, and then that they had to bombard and shell those areas to keep control of them. The people of the Donbass region have been treated as terrorists, and all they wanted was to have a claim on their own sovereignty and liberty. When you don't respect the right of peoples to disassociate from countries they don't want to be associated with, you can start a war, because the proper response to it then, when you get bombarded, when these people are losing their humanitarian rights, their right to just exist peacefully, there will be a response one day. And today the response is coming in the form of the Russian intervention. And finally, there's been a very regular tradition in Ukraine, and especially in the Donbass region, which is the killing of local mayors and political leaders associated with the pro-Russian position. So imagine you're in these towns and you're an ethnic Russian. Not only are you the victim of the oppression of the central government of Ukraine, you are also getting bombarded because your area has been judged as a place for terrorism. People are calling for the genocide of your own people on mainstream TV in Ukraine. But on top of it, whenever you vote for political representatives that think like you and that represent your views, they end up assassinated. Assassination of DPR and LPR leaders has been a very regular trend happening since 2014, sometimes performed by the Ukrainian army, sometimes by the Azov battalion, with which they are essentially allies. In fact, at this point, it's basically undistinguishable. They are working on the same side. All of these create justifications for Russia to intervene, because there are Russian citizens in these areas of Ukraine that are the victim of these forms of oppression. But even if they weren't Russian citizens, they are still ethnic Russians. They are still people who are sympathetic to Russia, and someone must come to their protection. America will not. They were rooting for the continuation of this oppression, because the extension of Ukraine, the appropriation of historically Russian territory to Ukraine, is in the interest of the NATO alliance. That's why, for the first time in the last 10 years, it's the first time I ever hear from the left that it's okay to be a neo-Nazi. I mean, it wasn't even okay to be white 3 years ago. But right now, it's okay to be a neo-Nazi, according to them, because the neo-Nazis in this particular area of the world are playing exactly the game that they want to play. So Russia comes in and stops this oppression. In fact, I believe that already on the first day of the war, there were people in the Donbass region extremely relieved, essentially experiencing the intervention of Russia as their only hope to get the shelling over in their region. And now Ukraine has something more than shelling the Donbass region on their hand. They have to deal with an invasion that's slowly taking over a third of their country. But there are also other justifications. Russia is not just going in because of a humanitarian problem with the southeast. The Ukrainian regime has broken its promises, some of these promises having been done directly to Russia. So first, Zelensky got elected with the promise of ending the war in Donbass. But the shelling has continued and the domination of territories by the Ukrainian army expanded. So you have a guy here who, on the mediatic side and in terms of the promise to his own people, has said, we will stop doing this. We will stop attacking the Donbass. But he continued, probably because the interests that own Zelensky were not really interested in making him respect his promise. There was also the breach of the Minsk agreements by denial of the democratic process in the independent regions and by refusal to pass the constitutional reforms promised in the agreements. So the Minsk agreements are a series of two different agreements that were entered in after 2014 when Yanukovych was expelled and the war broke out. And Ukraine and Russia, as part of these agreements, both made concessions. So the concessions were as follows. First, Russia wouldn't, there would be a ceasefire, so these areas of the southeast would not fire toward Ukraine, but Ukraine would also stop firing toward them. But one big concession that Ukraine had to do on their side, and they promised to do it by signing these agreements, was to allow these areas to take action in the form of democratic vote to determine the extent of their sovereignty and the extent of their local leaders. But these elections happened, but they were never recognized by Ukraine. So you have Ukraine signing a paper that says, we're going to allow you to have your own elections. You're going to be locally managed and ruled by whoever you choose. But when the choice came, and when these elections didn't turn in the way that Ukraine wanted, they started saying, oh, these elections were invalid. These elections don't count. Same thing for the referendums. Oh, these referendums don't count. They are run by terrorists. So how can you, on the one hand, make a concession against a peace agreement that you obtained from Russia and from these areas, but on the other hand, you deny the validity of the election that you said had to happen? It's nonsense, and it's because Ukraine has never had the intention of respecting their own side of the deal. A second thing that Ukraine committed to do and didn't do, they promised a constitutional reform that would give sovereignty and independence to the DPR and LPR region. But they never did it. They never did the constitutional reform. So two promises that were taken on the Ukraine side were never respected. And I'm not even talking about the ceasefire, which they also didn't respect. So there was a pause in this war. Essentially, the Minsk agreements were given the chance. Russia gave the chance to the Minsk agreements, but they didn't work. And so today you have the consequence of Ukraine's action, which have been to not respect their side of the promise, and therefore Russia has to do something. Third point within the considerations regarding Russia. Ukraine, in its lawless behavior, constitutes an existential threat to Russia. The corruption of elites by American institutions creates a lack of trust in the ability of Ukraine to follow its own population's interests going forward, rather than submit to the desires of the corrupted American regime. One example of this being the whole Hunter Biden situation. So when you deal with a country, and especially if this country is carrying your pipelines and potentially is a point of passation for your resources toward Europe, you need to know that the law in this country will be applied fairly. For example, you need to know that anti-corruption measures will be followed, and that if some corrupt agent shows up to change the decision of a big corporation or the government, that these people will be punished properly. And yet what you have in the whole Joe Biden intervening in Ukraine with Hunter Biden on the seat of Burisma is basically an intervention by the American regime to keep a prosecution from happening, to keep a certain company from being prosecuted for corruption. That leads to a lack of trust, because if you're Russia, you look at this and you're like, okay, so basically any Russian will be pursued for corruption they haven't committed in Ukraine. But when the pro-American elite does commit acts of corruption, they will be stopped by Joe Biden, who will be holding this humanitarian aid over their head and say, you're not getting those billions of dollars if you keep this prosecution going. So if you're Russia, you look at Ukraine and it's like an unstable X. It's like a bubble of danger here. There's a bubble of danger that can only be used by your enemies, that can only be used against your interests, and that doesn't have the regular tools of the law to combat such acts of corruption. Ukraine has decided that because they were receiving American funds, that they would not apply the law on Burisma, they would not apply the law on the friends of Hunter Biden, and as such, they constitute a risk for future Russian business. NATO expansion to Ukraine would mean that the American regime can bend the will of future leaders of Russia, either through territorial domination at the economic level, for example, pipelines, that kind of stuff, or just paths of traveling and transportation of goods, or through military threat. So if Russia sees Ukraine being taken over by America, and, you know, America has shown that it was capable of bending the law in Ukraine with just humanitarian aid. Even imagine if they had NATO, imagine if they had missile silos onto Ukraine. They would be able to bend the will of much more than Ukraine. They would be able to bend the will of future Russian presidents. As such, the expansion of NATO over Ukraine is an existential threat to Moscow, is creating a situation where Moscow will be either isolated or submitted to the wills of the American economic elites. Russia cannot let this happen if it wants to promise a great future for its people, and so it is bound to intervene. Finally, in the face of the irregularities of the corrupt Ukrainian regime and the desire to expand NATO, Russia has no other choice to ensure its sovereignty than intervene. When you are, if you are Russia for the next 50 to 100 years, and you have no path toward the West, because the US could block at the level of Ukraine, Western Europe could block at the level of the various small European countries in Eastern Europe, Russia would be isolated and capable of participating to the normal business opportunities that arise from the growth of the population and the development of the world going forward. So Russia would be a dead end, and it would be through corrupt means that it was made into a dead end. And we're not even talking here about the threat of potentially Russia getting dominated, because one of the great points of attraction for the economy in the next 100 years is resources, water, minerals, oil, rare earth minerals, that kind of stuff. And Russia, being a great large surface area country, has plenty of all of this. if Russia has plenty of all of this but cannot do commerce with partners because it is being blocked forcibly by corrupted US elites, the way they blocked the prosecution of corrupted elites in Ukraine, then all of this wealth is worth nothing for Russia. Russia would be stuck selling it at rebate or at the price that the Americans want to pay, and would be threatened by potentially the threat of invasion if they don't want to sell it. So the sovereignty of Russia relies on making sure that unstable countries and corrupt countries like Ukraine do not exist around its territorial borders. So too bad for the Ukrainians, too bad for the people who are benefiting and squeezing the juice out of this lemon that Ukraine is, like Hunter Biden. But your dealings now have an existential and sovereign threat onto Moscow. That's why Moscow is justified in taking action. And finally, I will talk about the third point, which is the perspective of Ukraine. Because although I think that the question of whether Ukraine benefits from that war is not so important, because the question is whether Russia is justified in getting involved. But there's still a question from a consequentialist perspective about whether Ukraine, whether it's in the long-term benefit of Ukraine, although in the short term, of course, there is human suffering, there is human displacement, but in the long run, Ukraine in its current state is an undesirable place, and it needs improvement. Ukraine is one of the poorest countries in Europe. Ukraine is one of the most lawless places in Europe. Assassination is a regular way of dealing with political officials that do not comply with the desires of the corrupt regime or the mafias. Ukraine is a central hub for human trafficking in the form of slaves for manual labor and sex slaves, including children. This sums up to about 300,000 humans trafficked in the last three decades. 300,000 humans sold in slavery in a European country. Ukraine has a murder rate of 3.4 per 100,000. Which would become the highest rate in Europe if it was to join Europe. It is four times higher than Poland. And while Russian leadership may not fix all of these problems, a simple nudge onto Ukraine is needed and likely to push it in a better direction. Ukraine is at the bottom of the barrel. And really anything that can be a change to this society has a shot at improving it. Now, of course, Russia has its own wrongdoings that are, and it has aspects of its society that are just as criticizable. But the question is not whether Ukraine will be fully under a Russian leadership here. The question is, given that this is the status of Ukraine as of now, is it a desirable thing to keep the Ukrainian population from suffering from this criminality, this overtake of their resource trading systems by foreign elites? Is it in their interest to continue living through the horrors of human trafficking? I don't think it is. I think that anything that could be done to Ukraine has a shot at improving it. And while the denazification campaign launched by Russia may not be fully accomplished, sometimes a little bit of denazification can go a long way. Pineapple Platypotamus says, how exactly do sex traffickers sleep at night, guilty conscience and all? I think that when you are in such a state of poverty, you end up justifying from an existential perspective. I think that a lot of these people justify what they do as being the only way they can survive. So those are my three points that I want to make tonight. I don't know what will be the approach of counterpoints. Will it be addressing directly my my 3 points, or does he have his own points that he wants to make? I don't know, because he's although he's been hosting a stream on his YouTube channel to fundraise for Ukraine. So I have no doubt that he will take the side of Ukraine. He wants to fundraise to send weapons to Ukraine. The debate, when's the debate? It's in 1 hour 15 from now. So we'll be on the Crucible. I'll be sharing the link on my social media. Yeah, so I'm excited about this debate. I don't know what the counterpoints point will be, but listening to one of his stream, this fundraising stream, I conclude that he's very much into the basic Ukraine mediatic propaganda, you know, Russia having low moral troops, that kind of stuff. I've heard him say these things. So I'll be ready to counter his points and counter any points that he wants to make in the debate. I think that these three categories of points to me justify clearly the intervention of Russia. And I haven't gone on the basis of comparison to the US, but if you want to compare the justifications for Russia here with comparison to any US intervention of the last 60 years, you'll see that it compares extremely advantageously. The US, when it intervenes in the Middle East, doesn't have anything close to what Russia has. Like, there were no Americans living in Iraq and being oppressed by the Iraq regime. There weren't even weapons of mass destruction. So by the standard of American intervention, it's not even close. But I'm not even making this argument, because I think it's a weak argument, since I oppose to American intervention. So I'm not going to hold American intervention as the golden standard of proper military work. I think American interventions are disgusting. Those that have been made, I'm not saying any sort of American intervention would be bad, but those that have been made are terrible. Blood and Biden says, who is JF debating? Some shitlib. I'm debating Counterpoints, who's a centrist ex-soldier who's rooting for Ukraine. All right, join me on Entropy. I forgot to do my little announcement. Join me on Entropy. It is my favorite platform for super chats. Do you agree with me on Russia-Ukraine? I don't know how many people in the chat do agree with me, or how many people are watching me for getting a different view than their own. So I'm making a survey. Entropy is the right place to send support for the show. The link is right below the video in the description. And you can also support the show by using the support button on Odyssey. They have a credit card option with USD. Brazil Supreme Court judge bars messaging app Telegram. This is a massive happening in Brazil, because Bolsonaro is the leader of this country. He has been very successful at campaigning on his Telegram channel, because he would, of course, be barred by many other outlets. And now a judge has barred Telegram in the whole country on the basis that Telegram has not respected judicial orders forcing it to remove misinformation. So I have the impression here that we are in very dangerous territory of censorship, where the anti-Bolsonaro, probably anti-Bolsonaro judge system in Brazil is going after the main outlet, and they're not even just specifically ordering the cut of a given Telegram channel. They are saying all of Telegram will be abolished in the... So that means, I guess, they will ask the internet service providers to basically erase the IPs and the routes of connection toward this program, toward its servers, to make it a Brazil-wide shutdown of all Telegram communication. with sensors so much more than what is claimed to be the target. So I find this absolutely shocking, and it's kind of the beginning of the end for net neutrality. Russia army shelled Novy Petrovsky with MLRS multiple rocket launchers Grad earlier today. Petrol station damage, no casualties. I think that the great advancement of the Russian army today is the launch of the Dagger missile, the Kinzhal missile. In that case, it was not a nuclear missile, but the same missile case can carry a nuclear load, and it is equipped in a way, and it is functioning in a way as to undermine the capacity of anti-air, anti-missile defense. So it's a warhead that could eventually be launched against highly technological nations that have defense systems. Because of its unpredictable flight path, it is very hard to stop. So it was a great thing to see it used in this conflict against an ammunition depot in this case. And I think that the Russians intentionally launched it onto Western Ukraine just to make a message here that, you know, doesn't matter if it's deep into your defenses, even if it's in territory that we don't control, we can get this missile anywhere. Extremely important progress here in the conflict. Mariupol about to fall as fighting enters city streets. The fighting is already in the city itself. Russian forces have now sent ground troops into the major southeastern city of Mariupol. So now we see street fighting. And to be honest, what I realize is that once a city has been that shelled, the street fighting is not as bad as you could think. You know, I was telling at the beginning of this war, Putin has to avoid getting into a kind of civilian conflict with resistance pockets and hidden rebellions inside buildings. But I realize once you have leveled the city the way Mariupol has been just, it has been just covered with shell, there is a point at which your tanks can enter and the resistance will be minimal and it will be easy to identify and combat. So very impressive, but Mariupol may be under full control of the Russian forces very soon. It's a matter of days. It's a matter of just eliminating the last pockets of resistance. And that means that the Russian army is already making more progress than what they were ready to offer in the peace deal, you know? They've offered a peace deal to the Ukraine at the beginning of this whole thing, where Ukraine would have kept Mariupol. Ukraine would just have respected the sovereignty of DPR and LPR. But now Russia is making further progression. So I don't know if Russia today would be interested at a peace deal where they have to withdraw from Mariupol, because they now have control of this major port city. It's not something I would give up personally, so given that the cost of war have been already invested. The Russian Ministry of Defense accuses Ukraine that they are in preparation of attack on Western diplomats in Lviv, in planting explosives at cylinders with ammonium and chlorine in Sumy, deploying cylinders with chemicals to school in Kotlarovo village of Mykolaiv region. Very interesting claims here. There's no way for me to verify those, but Russia is saying, you know, things are being set up to make it look like we are targeting children with chemical weapon, and it's a setup, it's a lie, it's a false flag. I don't know how to verify this. I would like to see photos of these cylinders with ammonium. I would like to see some intelligence on what got these cylinders there, but it's very worrying, because you may have you may have Russia being tempted to just throw a bomb from the air just to destroy a military target, but then it's been trapped. It's been designed by the Azov battalion to eventually release a chemical load and make it look like it was a chlorine bomb or something. Very dirty, if that is to happen. I don't know that I can confirm it's happening, but if that happens, that would be a very cynical way of winning a war. Video shows a Russian missile. It's an underground weapons depot for Ukrainian forces in the Dalatin region. I believe this, it's hard to confirm, okay, but I believe this would be the hypersonic missile. Based on the shape of it and based on the target, which was indeed an underground weapons depot, there is a big chance that this is the famous hypersonic missile that can carry a nuclear load, but that doesn't in this case. So let's have a look at it.
Вот ебать это пизда нахуй!
I mean, look at this. It is having a flight path that is extremely quick.
Вот ебать это пизда нахуй! Ебать!
And hitting there. It might be it. It might be it. In any case, that was in the Dalatin region. In Kharkov, we have seen further attacks, further clouds developing into the sky. Here they are. All right, this is what's happening in Kharkov, where Coach Red Pill is. A collapse of connectivity has been observed in internet providers. This post says that it's been observed in Kharkiv, but I think it's also been observed in Kiev to some extent. The company says that the server which issues IP addresses is down due to a power cut, and subscribers should not restart devices. So we are starting to see attacks onto the electrical infrastructure here of Ukraine. Mariupol Council: Russian occupiers forcibly moved thousands of Mariupol residents to Russia. The civilians were allegedly taken to camps where Russians checked their phones and documents and then forcibly moved some of them to remote cities in Russia. I don't know to what extent this is proven, because how would you know that they've been sent to remote cities? They may have been sent to some cities in Russia, but how can you track this if you're a Ukrainian resistance man inside Mariupol? All you know is that they're gone through buses and you don't know where they've gone. Putin destined to be hanged or drowned? As we end this third week of World War III, it's becoming clear that the West's endgame strategy is now regime change in Russia. As the money and weapons pour into Ukraine, the Ukrainian flag further morphs into the 21st century version of old shoe all around the Twitter sphere. It's time for him to go, Graham further said of Putin, echoing Joe Biden's blurted remarks that he's a war criminal. I wish somebody had taken Hitler out in the 30s. So yes, Vladimir Putin is not a legitimate leader. He's a war criminal. Oh my God. I hope that Putin is in a safe place, because there are so many people rooting for his death. They're gonna try in some form, even if it's through proxy agents inside Russia, but I hope that Putin is deep into a basement and never gets out of it. On the outskirts of Kharkiv, we have other images. I believe it's some of the explosions that we've seen from another angle. But here we see them from closer, perhaps. All right, so Kharkiv under attack. The Vice Minister of Chinese Foreign Affairs If the enlargement of NATO goes further, it would be getting closer to the periphery of Moscow, where a missile could touch the Kremlin in 7 or 8 minutes. So China is very much into understanding, promoting an understanding of the Russian position here. Very interesting to see China stand for its friend. Russian Ministry of Defense, Kiev plans attack on diplomatic facilities of the US and the West. So that's the same news item that we've reviewed, but here they clearly say that basically USA agents, perhaps USA diplomats, might be targeted to make it look like Russia is targeting them. These charts show Russia's invasion choking world of natural resources. The reach of Russia's commodity, palladium, was exported to the US, 27% of the imports, 24% of the fertilizer imports in Brazil, platinum in the Western Europe, 69%, gas 78%, coal 30% in Eastern Europe, or was it more? I don't know exactly where this arrow is leading. Aluminium 18% for some countries, sunflower oil, crude oil, nickel being exported toward the south. So that is those are massive amounts of exports that we don't know what will happen to them. If they drop, the prices will rise. If nations refuse those imports, the price will rise and there will be shortages. I don't know what will happen. And finally, before we end this show so that I can go prepare for the debate of tonight, Bill Gross warns Fed rates hikes will crack US economy and housing market. Bill Gross, the PIMCO founder and longtime bond king of Wall Street, has likely grown accustomed to critical portrayals in the press, blah, blah, blah. Raising the benchmark rate to this terminal level would cause the US economy to crack, Gross said, causing a recession and breaking the housing market. So what he's saying is if the Fed continues to go forward with their plan of hiking the rates of the money, of the interest rates, that would cause a recession. So it will be either a recession or the Fed says, oops, we're not hiking the rates. Either of two things would happen. So that's it for tonight, boys, for this show. However, come and see me at the Crucible. I will put the link. It's in 56 minutes from now. It will be an amazing debate. We will have a discussion with Counterpoint, who's very much pro-Ukraine. He's even sending his own money to the Ukraine humanitarian and soldier causes. And he says he wants this money to contribute to the killing of Russian soldiers. So we'll see what he has to say. It's going to be an amazing debate on the Crucible, which is always a fair platform. It's a great platform for debates. Do you agree with me on Russia-Ukraine? Three people voted yes, one person said no. All right, it's good to know that we have some amount of opposition in the chat. Much love. See you all in an hour from now.